Welcome to Asian American Stories, our new podcast spotlighting Asian American entrepreneurs and leaders in Los Angeles. I'm Danica Lowe, and I'm here with my co-host, Andy Wong. Andy, who are our guests today?
Yeah, I'm very excited to have Yong and Ted Kim, who are the Korean-American brothers behind Soul Sausage. So they may not remember this because they were in the weeds working in a food festival, but I met them in 2013. This is a year after they won Food Network's Great Food Truck Race. I was there at a food festival, and my immediate reaction was that, wow, this food popped, and these guys were like young guys who were cool. They're like these streetwear wearing, you know, like Hypebeast adjacent youngsters doing things like making poutine with Galbi and like riffing on arancini and spam musubi at the same time. And they were just having a blast doing it. And it was one of those moments where I was thinking about moving to LA at the time. And just like the energy of, you know, young entrepreneurs and chefs like that at the time were one reason I was like, this might make sense. I really feel this. So, you know, Soul Sausage, they've opened restaurants. They've become a catering force in LA. Their newest spot is a takeout window that they recently opened in Echo Park. Their Korean barbecue sausages are available at major stadiums and on Gold Belly and via Ghost Kitchen. And they recently returned to the Food Network for the new Great Food Truck Race All-Stars. I mean, I won't spoil it if you haven't seen it, but you can trust that they repped LA and their food really well. So we're here doing this podcast, which is presented by the LA Mayor's Office and their new AAPI initiative, largely because Soul Sausage and other restaurants worked with me and Carol Chen and Shirley Chung on Pop Off LA, a fundraiser where many chefs collaborated on dishes and raised money and awareness for the API community. So this podcast is just one step in a major movement in LA to give voice to the concerns of Asian American Pacific Islanders around the city. And Yong and Ted are exactly the type of entrepreneurs to be part of this. You know, one of their dishes that made a splash recently is known as Mom's Egg Fried Rice, and it's a tribute to immigrant families. So why not start there?
First of all, wow, what an intro.
Take it away, Ted.
Yeah. Thank you guys. Thank you, and Andy, for having us. It's a true honor to represent LA. Yeah, we love LA.
Yeah, so happy that you guys are here. So I know you guys a little bit. Danica's just getting to know you, so I think she should kick it off with some questions.
Let's do it, Danica.
All right, so this is, let's start all the way at the beginning, because that's the best place to start, right? So I would love to know about your family's history in the United States. Anything you remember or that your parents told you about an immigrant story in the family, and your earliest childhood memories.
Andy painted us as this young guys, but we've been doing this for a decade now, almost, right? Next year is going to be our 10-year anniversary. But yeah, to Danica, your question.
Me and my brother. Bro.
I know. I'm getting there, Ted.
Okay.
But yeah, going back, me and my brother, we immigrated to the States in 1987. So my brother was 4, I was 6. And obviously, you know, my dad came through Samsung Electronics. And so we came with just no knowledge, nothing, no family. And so, you know, even up till this point, we still have no family here. So it was just me and my brother, my mom and my dad. So we obviously had just a small, tight-knit family growing up. But you know, we never thought we'd get into food. That's a funny story, right? Me and my brother, we were both in advertising. You know, we were both good, decent kids. We grew up in the Silicon Valley in this little town called Cupertino. Nobody knew what Cupertino was before Apple computers. So we'd always have to explain it's 40 miles south of San Francisco. But yeah, now here we are. We moved up to LA, you know, after our college years, and we ventured just, you know, into the sausage business. And, you know, it's nothing that we've ever like dreamed about. You know, nobody, I don't think anybody dreams about going to the sausage business, but but I think what me and my brother have proven is that, you know, like we just find new ways to survive. And, you know, we always had this entrepreneurial spirit with our dad. And so like, I think that's one of the things I'm the most proud of is just like, just the way we adapt to being in the restaurant industry for 10 years.
How did you go from advertising to being in food? What sparked that?
Well, I mean, we were making a lot of money for our clients and we realized the power of digital marketing. And, you know, this is like, again, we're going to date ourselves, but Yelp was just starting to kind of like click. People really didn't know how to utilize Yelp. but we were utilizing it to like the max, asking every customer that we touch to write us a Yelp review back in the days. And we really prided ourselves in that because I remember we had like 100, like 50 Yelp reviews, and we had a perfect 5-star, and they would like push us up to like best of Yelp and like best new restaurant. And like, we didn't have a restaurant. We were just doing pop-ups. And yeah, it's just like when we realized that like other clients are making a lot of money off Instagram, Facebook, Yelp, we just wanted a product or something that we could build to utilize kind of our knowledge with that to like help, you know, like accentuate who we are kind of, you know, like Soul Sausage in a weird way is just kind of like an extension of us in a really cheesy way. Because this is the stuff we grew up eating, you know, we'd mix like kalbi with our French fries. We would add kimchi to everything, you know, like we would just pour sauce on everything. We'd have Korean fried chicken over waffle fries. You know, that's like how we grew up. So it's just, everything is just what we enjoy eating, and it's just supernatural.
What was the Korean food scene like in Cupertino in the 80s? And what was it like growing up there before Apple became such a big thing? Was there an Asian community when you guys were growing up? Or what were your friends like? Like, what was that suburban experience?
So for me, like, you know, like engineers, Silicon Valley, it attracted a lot of immigrants, a lot of smart immigrants. So we actually grew up with a lot of like Asian Americans. So our community, I mean, maybe more like high school, but like elementary wise, it was more diverse. But as I got more towards like junior high school, Cupertino became this kind of Asian hub. And it was very interesting because there weren't too many Korean people there. Like when we first got there, like a lot of the first few Korean markets were just like mom and pop shops. And, you know, like we still couldn't get access to a lot of the ingredients that we wanted in Korea because they had a hard time exporting it. But man, when I was getting to like our high school, I think there was like 4 Korean markets on El Camino that we were able to like go to. And I just remember thinking like how far we've come as just even the Korean community, because we would go to Chinese markets in the beginning or just like your mom and pop shops. But now we had like 4 or 5 different types of kimchi that were packed and, you know, kalbi pre-made like meats and stuff. So I just remember like high school, like it was very cool because Korean food was starting to like, you know, be more present. And that was really cool.
Even 10 years ago, man, 10 years ago when we started, Korean food was kind of on this upward trajectory with like Gogi, right? And so, you know, Ted was running these Korean cook-offs, and I remember like that was when it was really coming up. Like Korean barbecue was like obviously the gateway for a lot of our cuisine. But my memory of back in the days was just very scarce to find anything. And our mom would cook a lot of our food, Korean foods. And so, you know, it was bibimbap at that time. And then sundubu was kind of coming up. And then like maybe like 10, 15 years ago was when the Korean barbecue scene kind of really took off. And because of that and all this whole like K-pop and culture, I think Korean food is now becoming a really global like cuisine. And I'm really proud of that, you know. People know our stuff and our ingredients, and we're in pantries and we're gochujang, and
we're on the Lakers jersey,
people's homes.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
We're on the Lakers.
Crazy.
Right. I mean, I think it's just the whole absorption of the culture. I mean, Lisa from Blackpink knocked Drake off the hip hop charts, you know? It's just
he's awesome.
This moment is really, really happening right now.
And Squid Game, come on. Like Squid Game is like the every other post on Instagram right now.
Right. It's gonna become the most watched show in Netflix history. It may just become the most watched show in history, period, if this keeps going. So I mean it's wild.
You know how many people have asked us to do that dessert dish, you know?
Okay.
Everybody, like, you guys should do this.
So you were mentioning Kogi, and I want to bring up something that I just feel is important and sort of overlooked. Like, because obviously, like, Roy Choi and Kogi were out there. You guys were out there. You win this big Food Network contest. Li Wei Lau's out there, like, doing his boba truck at around the same time. Like, did you feel like that you were part of this movement of, like, you know, at that point, young Asian American entrepreneurs? I mean, I know it was mid-career for Roy Choi. Mm-hmm. But like, did you feel like you were part of something together, or is it just more isolated and coincidental? Because so sort of like the outside viewpoint, it was just this cool thing. Like LA has the coolest food truck scene in America, and it's largely because of Asian Americans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there was at one point where, I mean, like Roy kind of set the tone. And like, there was one period where there's so many Korean taco trucks, and it just blew my mind how many there were. And I mean, obviously they're making money because more and more of them are coming. But, you know, in the food truck world, there's like this like camaraderie because it's not an easy job. Everybody knows how much time and grind goes into, you know, the food truck world. So, you know, like even when we see Roy, he always like, you know, tells us like, hey, I see what you guys are up to. Good stuff. And, you know, like same with when we see other people, it's like, hey, we saw you guys did this festival, or we saw you were at this location. You guys were crushing it. And there's just like this brotherhood, like unspoken, like just respect for all food truck operators, because it's not an easy job. And that time it was really special because, man, LA is just a cultural melting pot. There was food trucks with like Indian food, like Mexican food, Japanese food. And like these trucks were mobile. So any place you go, you would almost have like this kick-ass food program that just pops up in front of you. And you have so many cool options. And that's why I think LA is so special, because there's so many different options, so many cultures here. And like food trucks are cool because you just roll up with like the food truck gang, and it's like, you just cover all countries and all different types of cuisines. And there's something for everyone when you go to those types of events. And, you know, it's, I miss that era, man.
Yeah. Going back to your question, Andy, though, I don't really know, you know, the whole succession of it isn't isolated, and it was just timing wise that it was strung together. But we definitely, like, you know, to Ted's point, we definitely have to credit, you know, our predecessor and then the people that kind of knocked down the door a little bit more for us. But you know, it was, I don't know, it's an accumulation of all those things, right? Like people is ready for Korean barbecue. People are ready for, like a Korean American, Korean barbecue sausage, you know, which we were at the perfect time. You know, I want to say that it was like all interconnected, but you know, I think people see when it's natural and when it's like forced. And I think it was just our time to kind of like be at that forefront of cuisine and even in media. It's really hard to answer your question, but
when there were a lot of these Korean trucks that were operating, it all helps us though, because like we're like kind of socializing Korean food, and these are all the different like marketing people that are explaining Korean food to the other people. So the fact that we had all these different Asian cuisines, it was just a good time for people to just teach the world about like not just Korean food, but like Japanese food, like Thai food, like it was such a dope time, because people were talking about like Asian food and it was coming out of food trucks, which is wild, you know.
I mean, the legacy is here now, because like, look, you guys are in major stadiums now. Whatever, you're talking about other Asian American food trucks. The Boba truck led to the joint. Kogi led to a restaurant in Las Vegas. Komodo led to Bone Kettle. I mean, these are just the ones that are off the top of my head, but it's like, I know there have been struggles along the way, but clearly you were part of this moment that changed the culture, because I'm sure you had this moment last year that was bittersweet when we saw that Beverly Soon Tofu and Spoon by H closed, but then just the outpouring of emotion where everybody was so mad about it. And it was at that moment where I just realized, like, this is a sad way to realize it, but Korean food has moved past this fringe thing to be this thing where this restaurant closes, and this is the absolute worst thing that has happened to the LA dining scene. So, I mean, I think that you guys are part of that narrative, right? I mean, Korean food is just one of the primary things that people associate with LA food now.
Yeah, I mean, when I think of LA,
Korean
think
and
of
Mexican. Food,
yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, Korean and Mexican food is like, I feel like, represents LA.
Ezra Sochoa said that Roy Choi was just a huge inspiration for him. So it all goes back to the same place.
No, like the whole thing about like us being a part of it, me and my brother were like very humble. We don't really like to like think of it in that way. But like, you know, if us being on TV and us representing K-Town and LA and Korean cuisine helped in any way, then that's awesome, you know, because even one of our managers was like a big admirer of us, you know, when we first started, and he's like, oh, you guys did this for us, and he inspired his truck and everything. So that's cool. You know, we never think about like trying to be like examples. We just want to just, you know, forge ahead and just do what feels right for us. I think that's kind of like the reasons why we're still in the game. Is like, you know, we're not here to just hop onto a fad, but we're here to really like dictate how Korean food is viewed by the world, and we want to be a part of that. You know, like we don't want a Caucasian chef on Food Network saying this is how you eat gochujang, this is how you eat bibimbap. No, like that's what you learn from your friend and you're just watering it down. But like, we want to tell the stories, we want to tell the culture. So, so it's important for you, people like Danica and Andy, to like, you know, get those stories heard, because, you know, even with like Shang-Chi and all these media stuff, it's all happening now because people that are making decisions are people of color, you know, and we need more of that.
Amen, brother.
You know, it's really great. We interviewed Dan Lin for this podcast, you know, Dan Lin, who produced all the Lego movies and has this slate of movies that he told us about. And it really just is, he is now in a position of great power where he can really just influence who is in movies and who gets to write stories and tell stories and portray, you know, the characters in these stories. And it's a truly, truly powerful thing to feel like, you know, we're seeing this happen right now. And also, he has a huge creative campus in historic Filipino town, and he supports all those restaurants that are around there. So it's like, this is what it actually means. We're like, we're building this community.
Yeah.
But Young, one thing you're mentioning is, yes, I know you're humble, but yes, I also know you've had great success on the Food Network. So tell me a little bit about being on that show the first time and also the second time, and whether for you that was a business decision, a marketing decision, something that you thought would be fun. Just walk me through why you decided to do it and then why you think you did so well.
Well, I think the first time around we did it just because we had a lot of free time. I mean, to be completely frank, we were building out our first restaurant, and we thought we'd have to be more involved with that restaurant, but we had a lot of free time, and we saw a post on Eater LA, and we just applied and we got on, and we really like had no plan with that. We were just like, food truck was never part of our business plan, by the way. It was just something kind of that fell into our lap. And we just like, our goal for that show was to just make it through the first like four episodes and just not make fools of ourselves. That was like the number one goal for that show, is like, represent, don't make an ass of yourself. Like it'll spill over to some marketing. And that's why we jumped on that show. And you know, after a couple episodes, we're like, holy crap, like the world is ready for Korean flavors. They just don't have people putting it in front of them. And, you know, further along we got, we're like, holy moly, like the world is ready for Korean food. And I think we can win this. And, you know, we won season three. And that was a very, very exciting year for us, because that's when we opened up our first restaurant and our food truck at the same time. And, you know, Yang always talks about it. 2012 was just like a blur, because just everything that could go right went right for us that year. We're at like our highest high for 2012. And then, you know, we've been doing it, like Young said, for 10 years. We've had our highs. We've also had our very lows too. So, you know, the fact that we survived these 10 years is pretty amazing. And, you know, when they hit us up for the All-Star season, it was just a no-brainer for us. Me and my brother are super competitive. We felt like we could rock with the best of the best. And we just kind of want to see how we you know, matched up against some of these other trucks that won other seasons. And so we're like, wow, this is a completely different game. And we definitely were competing with, you know, the best food trucks in the country. It was a great time. We did it during the pandemic, which was very odd. But man, that show was pretty awesome. And I will never be able to experience something like that ever again, because, you know, it's like all the best food truck chefs on one show, just duking it out, like battle royale style. And we thought we were competitive, but these other trucks are just as competitive. And it was a fun times. Yeah.
Well, you guys were competitive. And again, not to give away too much, you guys were competitive, but it was also clear, because you even talked about this during the show, that you guys were trying to stay very true to yourselves and what Soul Sausage is. And there were certainly other teams that did things with pricing or did things with sort of unlikely presentations or ingredients that really, like, they were just doing it because they thought it would help them win. Why did you decide sort of just to do it your way, you know, versus this other thing that other people were doing?
The final dish that we made for the final episode, you know, me and my brother and Han, we talk about this all the time. We're like, no person would really put mom's egg rice as a final dish. And so, you know, we it's funny because we talked about it. We're like, hey, if we have to do one final dish, what would it be? And that was from episode one. Like, that was going to be our dish no matter what. And so I think when we made that decision, we were just more like, it was more important us to tell the story correctly than to win for us. You know, I mean, like, maybe hindsight now, we're just saying that, whatever. But we really felt that if, you know, if we represented ourselves to the most truest, authentic self, then that, you know, then we kind of win, you know. And to be honest, the team that won really wanted to win at all costs. And some people, they need that. But for us, like, maybe if we didn't win the first season 3, maybe that would have been different. But like, we already won. We already know that we can hang with these guys. And it's just a part of us was like, hey, let's be real and let's represent, man. You know, like, let's do something that no like chef would put out there. You know, just, and it came out really genuinely, you know, Ted bawled his eyes out and it was a really genuine moment. It was a really good moment. And like, even when I watch the reruns of that clip, I still get teary eyed because it was just a great moment that we got to be a part of. And I think a lot of people resonated with that sentiment as well, because, you know, they come to our store and they write on the walls and they say, this is the finale was bullshit and you guys should, you know, whatever. So
I think I wrote that.
Yeah. I mean, I hope
that many other people. So yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, you know,
we won, you know, like the results don't even matter. It's like, that was such a big win for us. For us to be able to tell that tale of the mom's egg rice, you know, and it was so crazy because every, like, not even just Asian like immigrants, like we had like Hispanic people saying, "Yo, my mom used to make that for me every day with chorizo." Like, it's like it connected so well with so many different people, and it's like the ultimate immigrant dish, just like rice and eggs and whatever sauce you want to put on top of it, because that's at the end of the day, that's soul food right there, you know.
Talking about representation and immigrants and the communities in LA, we want to bring it back a little bit to your experiences over the past few years. And what has it been like for you guys? I think this is something that, you know, we're obviously very curious about with all of our guests, because it's so hard to like see people in person now, right? So what has the last few years been like for you guys? You guys worked with Andy and his team on Pop of LA. And why is Asian American unification and like conversation and rallying around issues around the communities, why has it become so important to you?
I mean, look, before we maybe had an incident with Asian hate and it would be swept under the rug, you know, maybe there was no social media, maybe there's no media that wanted to cover it, but now you can't hide anything, right? So it just came at the right time where, you know, our culture and our food is on the up and up, and you know, we have to embrace each other and we have to help each other. And this is our moment, you know? So there's a part of me that says sometimes like Asian people, we complain too much, but like there's important and really nasty things going on in the last 2 years. We need to really, these are the moments where we need to like kind of group together and band together and just, you know, show the strength in numbers. And I think we did a good job. I think everybody did a good job. And, you know, I know Andy was a big part of that, raising money and awareness. So yeah, thank you. You guys have done way more than we have. You know, we're, you know, we helped cook some food and raise some money, but obviously we want to do more. You know, it's just very important to us. You know, like the whole immigrant story, and this is our story, you know, it's all of our stories. And so it's very important to us. It's very important to us.
And ever since we started, like there's a lot of like times where, you know, we felt a lot of loneliness because there's not a lot of people doing what we do. And it's hard to talk to my friends about like some of the difficulties we have because they don't experience it as like a restaurant owner. I mean, yeah, we have like, you know, your friends that run like sushi restaurants and stuff like that, but to have like a Korean fusion type of restaurant, trying to explain that to people, trying to create new dishes and having the struggles with, you know, just some like a lot of people don't understand that. But when you like group like, you know, Asian chefs and put them in a room together, all that stuff comes out and like you kind of understand each other. And that support system is something that we never had over the last 10 years. We were so busy trying to build like and making a lot of mistakes along the way. And, you know, some successes too. But, you know, the fact that we're able to come together, and that's why we've been hosting these like monthly, like just happy hours with just, you know, restaurateurs and in our patio lately. And it's been so refreshing because you get to vent out all your struggles, you know, and you sometimes you feel like you're the only one that's going through those struggles. But, you know, this other Asian pastry chef, she's going through the same hurdles as we are. And when you talk about it and when you support each other on that, it just becomes a lot easier on you and the burden gets kind of lifted. So for me personally, it's been great seeing kind of like the community come together more. We have like a group that we cook with called Norja, and that's been really refreshing for me because we throw events with other, you know, Asian American chefs. And the reason why that happened is because, you know, we just over drinks, we just kind of vent to each other saying, oh, this is so tough. I have no resources for that. I have no resources for that. And then when you just kind of let it out there, you just kind of help each other solve problems together. And that's when I really realized that, you know, the numbers do matter. And, you know, the people that are representing for Asian culture and Asian cuisine, they kind of need to have like, you know, these group meetings or these get togethers or and people like, you know, Andy and Jenny and Crystal, all those people, they like make these things happen so that we could, you know, be united. And I think that's really important right now. And I'm not super eloquent with that, but you get the drift. It's like, you know, sometimes it's just a lot of burden for one person. But when you guys group up, it's just a lot of problems get solved. So we're very thankful that all this is happening right now.
Andy and I have been working on a secret, not secret, which is not yet launched side project, which is very, very culinary and restaurant focused. And I think a lot of people we've been talking to for that project, what we have learned just from doing 6 interviews is that Asian food in America isn't just going to the restaurant and getting dinner. On the macro level, it's diplomacy. There was that chant during all of those protests that was love our food, love our people.
Yep.
It's like you know how China sends pandas out to different countries. It's sort of like that, but it's food. Right?
There's any orange chicken.
It's a way of explaining your culture to other people without having to explain it. So people can actually experience it and taste it, and it becomes literally part of their body. Yeah. But on a deeper level, everyone we've talked to, you guys and an entire generation of restaurateurs, it's not just about the restaurant. It's about family. It's about culture. And what you guys are doing, marrying different cultures and cuisines into something that is purely American. Yep. In its own new way. Yeah. That it's almost like the comparative literature of food. That's what it is.
Real talk. Awesome.
You know, even it's a shameless plug, but you know, we have our food at stadiums, and concession food has been such a historically like preset like cuisine when you go to ball games. You know, and for us, it's kind of a new space for us, but it's taken so much time, like in the streets, in the food truck, you could pop up anywhere, you could sell Asian food, but like just the way how concessions and food has been in America, like we're slowly making our headwinds inside, but it's still a long way, you know, but it's exciting, right? It's right now, this is the exciting part where the struggle is where you find the most like, you know, character and drama and it's all unfolding, you know? And so it's you know, me and my brother were like, we love the struggle in a sad way. You know, it's like good things come out of these struggles. You know,
we started
every day. And
I'm just glad we started this like 10 years ago because I don't think I could have started this at my age right now. My body would physically just not be able to handle it.
But honestly, please plug a little bit. You're mentioning stadiums. What stadiums is your food at, and where else can people find your food? You know, how else can they hire you to bring them food? I mean, talk about that, please.
Yeah. So right now we're at the Coliseum for all the USC home football games and all the concerts there. We're at Bank of California Stadium for all the LAFC home games. We're at the Raymond James Stadium in Tampa Bay, where Tom Brady lives plays. And are we still in Dallas? We were the Cowboys for a little bit. The Ford Amphitheater.
Theater this year.
Convention Center will be there. Yeah. But the big thing that we're pushing right now is our Toshidaks. Oh, so sorry, going back to that. We also sell our sausages and our fried chicken nationwide on Gold Belly, which has been a big savior for us during the pandemic when people weren't able to go to restaurants and travel and vacation. Now, like, you could have your favorite restaurants from New York, LA, Chicago mailed to you overnight. So that's been really helpful for us. So that's goldbelly.com and then just Google Soul Sausage. But right now in LA, what we've been pushing is these Korean lunch boxes called Toshidaks. And, you know, you could find them at your H Mart or your local Zion Market or things like that. But we really kind of like are trying to make these Toshidaks the cool thing here in LA. It's not like the most sexiest thing, but it's just everything you need in a box. and it's really filling and it's really like comforting. So we have been pushing that to for people to come eat it out of our window. But also we've been starting to get a lot of catering orders and office orders and, you know, like baby's first birthdays, you know, like things like that. We want these to be kind of like a premium like lunchbox. So we've been really trying to spread the gospel of Toshirak and have all people from LA know what Toshirak means and have them think about Seoul sausage when, you know, they think about Korean lunches. So that's kind of how we
project. I told this to my guys yesterday. It's the first time you can actually have Korean fried chicken with like a rice and a full meal, the salad and the fixings and the side dishes. So I don't think anybody in LA does that. I think they just have Korean chicken and fries and stuff like that, but we have to put it nicely in a easily, beautifully. I don't know why Ted says it's not sexy. It's beautiful. It's
well, I mean, it is beautiful.
It's and, very it's beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it's very Instagram friendly, and also it's a lot of value, and I think people recognize that. It just like looks like this huge bounty of food, and then you realize, wait, this is $20, and I can't even finish all of this for my lunch. You know, that's.
Andy, talk about the frozen grapes. Talk about the frozen grapes.
Oh yeah, right. I mean, like that's like an old school restaurateur hack right there, right? I mean, but that stems from your childhood. You talk about the frozen grapes.
Yeah. that was something that we added last minute. We were like really proud of that. It's like poor man's like ice cream.
Really, really works.
Yeah. Well, so you could order that at soulsausage.com/orders. And you can plug in your office order and pick it up any time of the week, Monday through Friday, guys.
So you guys talked a little bit about, obviously, how you stay connected to the API community. And I just want to ask some quick fire questions. I mean, I know you guys are busy running this multifaceted business, but let's just start. What are some of the other restaurants that you really enjoy visiting in LA right now?
There's so many, Andy. Look what you're doing. Are we on the west side? Are we downtown?
Yeah, or I mean, talk about Koreatown. Talk about Sawtelle. However you want to do it. Talk about your friends that are near you. You know, downtown Echo Park, Silver Lake, right now.
No, I've been enjoying Filipino food a lot. So we like go to Hi-Fi Kitchen a lot. We go to Big Boys a lot up in West LA. I'm still a huge fan of Guisados. Right, and then I've been going to Sonora Town a lot lately. So that's like definitely on top of my list. Yesterday we had Hamjibak. Hamjibak is like my dad's favorite, like Korean barbecue pork ribs. And the Kamjatang at Kamjagor is my jam. And yeah, like I eat a lot of Korean and Mexican food. Those are like my two favorites.
Yeah, that's you're in LA, man.
Yeah. It's like powered by a Korean and Mexican food.
It's wild that you mentioned Hi-Fi Kitchen because we were just recording with Dan Lin and Hi-Fi Kitchen is at his complex. It's just
right across the street, right?
So small and connected, yeah.
Yeah. And then there's a Boba Guys there. You know, the Boba Guys. So, Young, what are some of your favorites?
Once a week, I'll go to Hanbat Salamtang.
Oh, yeah.
But Ted named all the ones that we go to, you know. Korean, Mexican, that's our number one.
Are there any, you know, chefs and entrepreneurs in the food world that you just feel like shouting out? I mean, given that you mentioned that, you've been doing this for 10 years. You've obviously encountered a lot of people and you're in touch with a lot of them. Like, what's your group of people that you talk to whenever you need to vent about the pandemic and everything else?
I mean, the group that you assembled, Andy, has been kind of like our group that we've been talking to a lot lately, actually. So thank you for that.
Amazing.
Also, like Leo from Rice Box, we talk to him a lot. You know, Shirley, you know, we respect what she's doing. And a lot of us are kind of doing the same things of like operating a restaurant, operating Gold Belly, doing catering. So it's kind of like that group of people. Like I mentioned Big Boy, but we talk to Barb all the time over on Sawtelle. She's been crushing it with her catering and her beverage and her like retail lines. Those are just kind of some of the people that just come straight out of mind to us. Park's Barbecue in Koreatown. She's like big sis. She's always putting out good food. I always feel like, you know, she's like so many years ahead of the curve. And she's always like doing things that other like traditional Korean restaurants aren't doing. So that's been pretty inspiring. But even our chef friends out in like Han from Portland inspires me tremendously. Dookie Hong from San Francisco is a big inspiration for us. It's the three of us, we do a lot of events together, but those guys are always pushing the envelope. And yeah, like LA people are just hustlers. Like, I know everyone thinks LA people are very laid back, but people in LA like get stuff done.
We've been doing this for so long. Like, a lot of people have like kind of been out of the game too. So
yeah,
we're one of the few left standing. But people call us OG or whatever. I don't know what that means. But we're glad to share any knowledge we can to hardworking people. You know, so these days we're meeting a lot of newer concepts and newer operators and. And we love seeing that. We love seeing their passion and just their, you know, just like their blind ambitions, which we don't have anymore. yeah, it's good to see that.
We're hustlers, you know? But we're old hustlers. Are you that what you're saying?
We're old hustlers. We're a little bit more like regimented in our approach.
You know, it's interesting. One thing that you bring up about how LA is a city of hustlers and people think that you're laid back. I mean, it's something that I've noticed from the start of me living in LA, you know, for almost a decade now. But I think the difference is also this laid backness, meaning that like in New York City, if a certain restaurant opens in a certain genre, the restaurants that are competing with that restaurant will never show up for any opening party. They may even ban some of these people from their restaurant. All right. There may be all sorts of bad blood. This happens in New York all the time. In LA, I've always been astounded mm-hmm. that if some quote unquote new modern Asian restaurant opens up, like if you guys know them, you'll go say hi. Roy Choi will go say hi. Chris from Night Market will drop by, right? The Komodo guys will go. Justin from Anajak will go hang out. Leo and Lydia, Shirley, etc. So to me, that really like this is something that is, you know, very different about LA than some other cities, that there really is this feeling that like, okay, we're all in this. And this isn't just Asian restaurants, because Ezra Sochoa, as you know, at Mexicali, has a great relationship with the Asian American community and all other communities. But I think there's just this feeling of support that was, you know, really underscored during the pandemic.
Yeah, and that like kind of like laid backness is like our swagger, you know. It's like we don't have like a lot of the food out here in LA, it's not pretentious. It's like they don't need to prove themselves to anyone. So it's just like food that they're really cooking from their soul. And I think that's why food in LA is so good. It's just there's nothing like foofy about it. It's just raw and just very pure.
No tweezers.
That's what we'll call this podcast episode. No tweezers.
Yeah, no tweezers.
No tweezers. Just sausage.
I think that's a great place to wrap up. Where can people find you guys if people want to find you on social media?
We are at Seoul Sausage, like the city in Korea, the capital of Korea is called Seoul, S-E-O-U-L. So Seoul Sausage is where we're at Seoul Sausage. And if you go to soulsausage.com, you can see like all the activities that we're up to. And if you do want to support, there's multiple ways you can support us through that website, whether it's buying merch, ordering our sausages online, or just even booking, like, you know, catering for your office. All that stuff could happen on soulsausage.com. So check that out. Like us on Instagram. We just broke 20K yesterday during our team meeting, which was exciting. And we're ready for more, guys. So
it's amazing. Thank you so much for being our guest on this Los Angeles Mayor's Office podcast. We are so excited to see what you guys do next, especially when the world becomes normal again. So thanks so much for coming.
Thank you for listening to Los Angeles Asian American Stories. You can follow APILA on Facebook at API Los Angeles and on Instagram at API_LA. You can also find me, Andy Wong, on Instagram and Twitter at Andy Wong, NYLA. And you can find my co-host, Danica Lowe, on Instagram and Twitter at Danica Lowe. We appreciate you being part of our community.